Well, we're here doing Shakespeare in Scotland. But just recently, just before we came here, we did Shakespeare in China. And one of the biggest differences I can think of is that the cast of the Shakespeare in China was much more adorable than we were. Is that fair?
They were reduced, not in number, but in size.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 506, Shakespeare in China. Last month, in July 2016, Reed Martin, my wife Dee Ryan, and I spent a week in Beijing teaching theater workshops and directing a highly reduced version of Midsummer Night's Dream. This week, while the three of us are here in Edinburgh, Reed, Dee, and I reminisced about our time in Beijing and how it was set up as sort of a preview of our three-week China tour there this fall. Traveling to four cities in China in November and December of 2016. We're going to Shanghai, Beijing, Nanjing, and the fourth city we don't know how to pronounce. What is it?
Xianan.
I love that city.
Yes, it's my favorite city that starts with an X.
Xinjiang.
Well, you're the one, Dee Ryan, you're the one who speaks the most Chinese of us. You can say thank you in Chinese.
That's right.
Xie xie.
Xie xie. Xie xie.
That's good enough for me.
Uncanny.
So Yanda Li is our presenter there in China, and he asked us to come over just a month ago in July to teach some workshops to some very reduced actors.
Yes. They ranged in age from 5 to 9.
Yeah.
Am I right? And there were 7. There was 2 boys and 5 girls.
Mm-hmm.
And we put together a 25-minute version of A Midsummer Night's Dream in 5 days.
That's right.
With kids whose second language was English.
Right. And their English was far superior to our Chinese.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. No. Our Chinese is very bu hao. That's one word that we...
Yes, ni hao. Yes, and it was supposed to be a 40-minute show, but by the time we finished with it, it was 25.
Yes, we reduced it and got to...
Did I undercut it? Was it longer than 25?
No, it was 25.
Yeah, we were shooting for 40.
Yeah.
But, it was hard for them to memorize and everything. So when we were doing run-throughs, it was, sort of in the mid to high 30s. And then they hit the ground running on the day of the show. And 25 minutes. But everybody was delighted. Yanda was happy. The parents were happy.
Absolutely. Well, it was really fun. And these kids, they were younger than we thought that we were going to be teaching. And that was...
A surprise.
A surprise. And so we got there and we went, oh, okay. It's hard to memorize the text, and also it's hard to make sense of the text, and also we only had 5 days.
Yeah.
So it became a thing where we thought we were going to, and I'm here holding the microphone, but Reed Martin and Dee Ryan did the great majority of the teaching, if not all of the teaching, because I just ran sound. But we didn't get to teach them much about text or history of Shakespeare or that kind of thing, because they had just had to learn the lines and go.
Well,
there wasn't time for that.
With 5 days, it was just kind of what we can do is get this show up.
Yeah.
Right? And so if we were going to, Yanda asked us at the end if we were going to do it again, is a week enough? And we said, no, you really, 10 days or 2 weeks, because what I think we all feel, what it could have used is at least a couple of days just sitting down, really going over what is this mean. I mean, we would explain it to them, but if things is a second language, sometimes all they could just do was memorize it.
Well, and you need to do that with actors who speak English.
Yeah.
What is this Shakespearean text mean?
Yeah.
If I never play Kitty in the Corner again, it'll be too soon.
Dee, you need to describe for our listeners, what is Kitty Wants a Corner?
That's right. Kitty Wants a Corner is a game about making eye contact and listening and reacting to your partners before the person who is it takes your place in the circle.
It's just super fun, except it's a lot more fun when you're 5 or 9 than it is when you're like 56.
Well, and this was I thought the greatest part, because Reed, you come to your work from a physical clowning background, and you teach improv, and you guys were both working these kids sort of both ends, and so you would do the physical warm up, and you both came up with these improv games that the kids would play, and it would really. That was their favorite part. They loved playing these games. It was then, and then the, I guess every rehearsal is like this. You know, you learn the lines, you learn the blocking. Well, this is way too much like work. Can we play Kitty Wants a Corner again?
Yeah.
But then once they got it, and once we got into the theater on the day, then it was like, so suddenly we want to do the play again.
Yeah, about day three or four, you'd play all the games. They'd be all excited. This is great. This is great. This is great. Okay, now we need to rehearse. And everybody would get really sleepy. I think that was just me.
Good to say, not just us.
Well, and we would try to explain to them that once you learn your lines, you can play the game of the scene.
Yeah,
that is
that's
Viola Spolin's idea behind playing games.
Yeah.
We should do theater as if we're in the games. And we did explain that to them. And I do think that by the time the show arrived, they understood that.
It was really fun to watch. I mean, all the kids were terrific in their own ways. The youngest, the 5-year-old, was a kid named Alfie, and
they all gave us English names, which I'm sure have nothing to do with their, you know, Chinese names. But God bless them for it.
But they all had English names, which is a whole other thing.
I think they all go to an English speaking school. And so their English, some of them were completely fluent coming in, and even the ones who weren't spoke a lot of English.
Well, Alfie was 5 years old, but he was almost one of the best readers in the room. I mean,
unbelievable
reader.
I remember the day that we did the first read through, and I thought that we were going to have to read the lines to Alfie, and he would just have to memorize them word for word. And he sat down and sounded out that's incredible. I have kids.
Yeah.
They couldn't read at 5, and now he's reading in a different language at 5. That was incredible.
Well, and he would also do these little games with everybody. So he'd have all these little rituals and, you know, improvised little moments with each. You know, NBA players, they all have a secret handshake. Mm-hmm. So Alfie had a secret handshake with everybody in the room, you know, by the end of the week. And his father told me a great story at the end of the week, too, which is like, you know, these kids have to go home to learn their lines and have their parents help them memorize their lines. And Alfie's dad came in on the last day, and he's a guy who works for Microsoft, you know, so clearly no dummy. But he said, Alfie told him, Dad, your American accent's not very good.
Well,
because he's been listening to us.
The other lovely thing at the end is after the performance, it was, you know, there were pictures and everything, and all the brothers and sisters and friends who came to see the show were running around the stage and picking up the props, and you could just see that they were excited by what happened. And not only did several of the kids say, are you coming back next year? But you could see their friends and siblings all wanted to do it.
Yeah, there was some really fantastic enthusiasm, and, you know, we were there going, well, how is this going to work at all? But I think by the end of the week, everybody felt, yeah, we got to do this again, but take longer with it, not do it just in 5 days. And it was a good introduction. We also did another workshop. Reed and Dee led a workshop at the theater where we're going to be performing in Beijing, and that was for grown-ups, and that was... relaxing because it was with grown-ups.
Yeah.
But that was also terrific, and I don't know who those folks were, but they were all participated very willingly.
Yeah, we had a huge turnout. There were 25 to 30 people.
Yeah.
I think Yenda said they're subscribers and supporters of the theater, because I said, who are these people who showed up at quite short notice? It was like 1 or 2 days notice. 25 people showed up, and they all joined in, and Yi, who works with Yenda, translated everything for us, and Dee started out. She did, I don't know, half an hour, 45 minutes of improv, and then I did half an hour or so of physical comedy. It was just great.
Yeah,
they were great. They were awesome. And we should talk about Yi, because she helped us out so much. She was our translator and production assistant and basically everything else, and a great sport.
And a great sport, and a former costume designer for the Chinese opera there at the Egg, that fabulous performing arts center there in Beijing. So I mean, I don't even think we used a fraction of what she's able to do. She was making these costumes
about 5 days in 2 different languages. I mean, the fact that we actually put up a show and There were no real mistakes, were there? I mean, I don't remember any disasters.
In performance, no, I don't think there was.
No, there was a lot of queuing and running around backstage, but for the most part, it really went off without a hitch, which is just so awesome for the kids. And we were, of course, just biting our nails. our puck was incredibly shy, and without us knowing, was the least confident with her English. Yeah. And she was great.
She stepped up.
Yeah, when we cast her, we didn't realize how much shyer she was than everybody else. And maybe she spoke the least amount of English. Yeah. And this was, I was a concern, you know, is she going to be able to learn this? If she learns it, will she say it on the cue? And she just said, she'll be able to do it. She'll be able to do it. She'll be able to. And Dee was absolutely right.
Well, and it was interesting, too, because it started out as we're teaching workshops to Shakespeare workshops to kids, theater workshops to kids, including Shakespeare, including physical comedy, including improv. But it really, as you've described it, Dee, it was English immersion, using Shakespeare and using theater games as a way of immersing yourself in the English language.
Well, and, you know, Jane, my wife and the RSC general manager, teaches theater in English and... most years, the foreign exchange students enroll in drama because you have to get up there and talk, you know, and that's how you learn. So theater, yes, it was theater. It was it was the whole package.
Hello, folks. This is Mike McShane, and you're listening deeply and completely to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Yes.
Where can you RSC the RSC? We have one more week here in Scotland performing William Shakespeare's long-lost first play abridged at the Pleasance Courtyard at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival until August 29th. Then we return to the U.S. in 2 weeks to perform the special election edition of The Complete History of America abridged in more than 17 states, including Missouri, Iowa, Montana, Indiana, Minnesota, Utah, Michigan, Kentucky, Alaska, Washington, New Jersey, Ohio, Virginia, South Carolina, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Florida. Those dates are up on our website now. We also have our three-week tour of China this fall, and in 2017 we'll begin a UK tour of William Shakespeare's long-lost first play abridged. We'll have more information about all of those overseas tours later this fall. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And now back to our conversation about our theater workshops in China and their value as both immersion and socializing tools.
Really interesting thing about this, coming from my point of view, which is from an improv comedy Viola Spolin background, is Viola Spolin herself, she started doing theater games with Neve. I can't remember her last name, but she was a sociologist, and they began doing these theater games with children who in Chicago who were from immigrant families, because it was easier to speak with your physicality and with sort of understanding emotional importance than it is to, when you don't have the verbal ability. And it was a way for the communities to mix and for the kids to meet other kids and all that. So it kind of goes all the way back to that, right? Yeah. Here we are teaching English and to children and acting out the words as we putting the, the words, the motion, Hamlet says?
So the action to the words, the words to the action.
Yes, and we're actually, you know, putting it out there. But I do think it's so funny. The first day, one of the parents said, you know, are the kids going to be able to do Shakespeare? And then Stephen, who was the most practical of all the children, said, why are we doing this play?
But by the end, he was the one who asked us, are we coming back? Yeah. Next year.
And Stephen was the one who's clearly going to grow up and be a director, because he knew everybody else's lines, and he would say to us, hey, that's not the real line. And we're going, that's okay. He got something out of his mouth.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, you know, it's one of the reasons we're doing Shakespeare, it's universal.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it is a play that's universal, and the kids could grasp it at the end.
Now, when they were reading it, and this is true with me, it seems really dry. And you go, what's this? And then you start acting out, and you go, oh, this is really fun.
Well, that's right. When Stephen's saying, when we read it. He's like, why are we going to do this? We're having fun playing games. But of course, the show was hilarious.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they had a ton of fun, and more than that, really reacted to the hearing the audience laugh at what they were doing.
Huge. Huge. Well, and you were saying throughout while we were there, there is such a history and a tradition of theater in China. And I don't know how much Western theater gets there or not. But I mean, just... There are a lot of theaters in Beijing.
Mm-hmm. We went to see Chinese opera, which was fascinating. I just think it's so interesting, the physicality and the masks and these ancient stories, and the instruments are all different. And I don't know, it was great.
You know, it was so great, and we were talking about it afterwards about the Jackie Chan movies, right?
Yeah.
And apparently, he comes from the Chinese opera background, and what he's doing is we think. Of like silent movie acting, so which is interesting because so much of the heightened language and action of Shakespeare is also that kind of acting too. So it all just sort of folds in on each other.
And what we haven't talked about is the fact is that Jane was supposed to come with us and ended up not being able to join us, but that Reed's sons Campbell and Kian and our daughter Daisy came with us. And we thought, well, it'll just be a trip for them, and they'll get to see a little bit of Beijing and hang out and maybe help out with the kids. Well, there were only 7 kids, so they helped a lot.
Yeah, we thought there might be, 10 to 12 kids, and you could do it. We got there, and we asked Yenda, could our kids be in the show?
Yeah, because we need them.
Yeah, and he said, absolutely.
Yeah, so they ended up playing, Campbell was Peter Quince, so he was in charge of the mechanicals, which was very funny. And then and Daisy and Kian, did the traditional doubling of Theseus, Hippolyta, and Oberon and Titania. So they were also authority figures telling people when to go and when to stay, et cetera.
And I think that kind of eased the minds of the kids as well, frequently there was an older person on stage who spoke English and understood what was going on,
and an older person who isn't a parent,
exactly,
a teenager, an older teenager,
it's kind of crazy. It was 5 days. I mean, one of the things we talked about, well, how are we going to do this in 5 days? And what the first day was breaking was just basically getting everybody to get comfortable together.
Read through the play, and because we needed to cast it at the end of the first day, so let's play a lot of games, let's do a lot of physical stuff, and then we'll roll the dice. Let's cast this thing and read through it.
Yeah, and then, I mean, day two, we started
blocking. It's sort of ridiculous, but in another way, it's really the only way to do it. Just get up on your feet and make it happen. So we're going back. So in November and December of this year, 2016, we'll be going back for this 3-week tour, and we'll be touring the complete works of William Shakespeare, abridged, and which we played at the Wuzhen Festival a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago now, and which was fantastic. But what I remember, and this will be true, I think, when we take it out on tour this year, is that there are monitors on either side of the stage with translations, both in English and in Chinese, for the audience. And so, which is great, except that you're standing center stage performing to an audience, many of whom are looking left or right to the monitors on the sides. And this year we can do a better job than we did in Wuzhen of making of breaking up the translated lines on the television screens into smaller chunks.
Yes, so the punchline isn't like at the beginning of a screen.
Yeah.
So the audience reads the punchline before you get to it. Yeah,
right.
You want the punchline as you switch.
We know more now. We can make this happen more smoothly.
Because I remember during the Chinese opera, there were some punchlines, but in English, they weren't a punchline, right? There was a translation.
Yeah,
was like...
That was a great thing about the Chinese opera, was that I'm surprised, but they had an English translation there.
Well, and a Chinese translation, which didn't surprise me when I heard them sing, because the Chinese people can't understand what they're singing. It's so distinctive, and that's true in English opera too. English language opera. We can be done anytime. Final thoughts, observations.
Well, I mean, do you feel like you learned anything, Reed? What's your takeaway, I guess, as sort of artistic merit or of what you thought it was going to be and what it ended up being?
I really come away with a great feeling about it. And I think, we said this earlier, but what got accomplished in 5 days, and then we performed on the sixth day, was amazing. I think all the kids felt really good about it. I happened to be sitting next to Yenda, our producer, and he was just beaming, and the parents all wanted pictures, and, you know, I just thought it was a great success. On a larger scale, I said to Campbell and Kean, I think the biggest lesson I took away was people are people and governments are governments. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just I had a wonderful experience with everybody I worked with.
I mean, I totally agree with that. We went into this. It all happened very last minute, and not knowing what it is. But really, it's once again, it's the same things that we deal with, with other actors in America. It's the same sort of. It's never going to get done. Oh, my God, it got done, and it's great. And
the language of theater is universal.
Yeah, yeah. What is from Shakespeare in Love? How does it?
I don't know. It's a mystery.
It's a mystery.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we had the opportunity to pass that on to China. It's a mystery. That's what is theater, Stephen? It's a mystery. We're all going to get it. Just learn your lines and everybody else's. I, at the end, was incredibly moved by it because the kids, as they always do, were so smart and just, did it on the day.
and you were tasked with saying a little something about each child as we presented them with a certificate of achievement and whatnot, and you couldn't keep it together. You were so moved.
I was so moved because I'm not sure. Just because we did get really close to those kids. I don't know how we did, but I guess the idea that I don't even speak. I barely speak English. You can tell if you listen to this. I barely put a sentence together, and here they are. They don't know what theater is. They've just been thrown at them. Here are some costumes, put that on, go across stage, come this way, say these lines, yelled Lysander. At one point Stephen said, I don't even know what I'm saying.
And that's why next year we're going to do it for longer than 5 days.
Yes, absolutely.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your favorite improv game via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, Rude Mechanical Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Tanya Arnold. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to our old friend Mike McShane, who's up here in Edinburgh performing with both Paul Merton and his improv chums and in something called Hip-Prov, where he improvises with hypnotized people. I can't wait to see that. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 506, 1518ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
And I remember saying, it's yield. And he said, that's what I'm saying, yield. And after seeing the way they drive, I understand why he doesn't understand the word yield.
That's
a whole different podcast, Driving in Beijing.
It absolutely is.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.